And for the rest of the time to the book of Exodus at the 14th chapter. Exodus chapter 14. Another longest chapter, but we really need to read it all in one piece to get the flavor of it. And this is what we're going to do now. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Pi-hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal-zephon, before it ye shall encamp by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, They are entangled in the land, the wilderness hath shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that he shall follow after them. And I will be honored upon Pharaoh, and upon all his host, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. And it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and of his servants was turned against the people, and they said, Why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? And he made ready his chariot, and took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots, and all the chariots of Egypt, and captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with a high hand. But the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, and his horsemen, and his army, and overtook them encamping by the sea beside Pi-hahiroth, before Baal-zephon. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord, and they said unto Moses, Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou thus dealt with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, Let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he shall show you this day. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. And the Lord said unto Moses, Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. But lift thou up thy rod, and stretch out thine hand over the sea, and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. And I will get me honor upon Pharaoh, and upon all his host, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gotten me honor upon Pharaoh, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud and darkness to them, but it gave light by night to those, so that the one came not near the other all the night. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses and his chariots and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch the Lord looked unto the host of Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off their chariot wheels, that they drave them heavily. So that the Egyptians said, Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them against the Egyptians. And the Lord said unto Moses, Stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to his strength when the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. A very dramatic and a very thrilling chapter indeed, and there's a sense in which the main substance of the chapter needs very little in the way of detailed comment, but I want to concentrate on three or four or even more salient points here. The first relates to the opening verses where the children of Israel are told to turn and encamp between Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal Zephon. Last week, you remember, we pointed out that God did not lead the Israelites the shortest way to Canaan. That would be by what we now know as the Gaza Strip and through the land of the Philistines. For this reason, as released captives, they were hardly fit to encounter a warlike people like the Philistines. They were low-spirited, and we see their low-spiritedness as soon as the problems began to arise, and they certainly wouldn't have been able to meet any Philistine army. Now, here we see in the opening verses another unexpected leading. Back from the obvious route that would put them ultimately beyond Pharaoh's reach, that is the way they were then going, and into not only the Egyptians' path, but into a cul-de-sac, which made Pharaoh think that they had lost their way and were wandering about in confusion and thus would be playing into Pharaoh's hands. Now, that is the point that is being made here. They were told to leave the way they were going and turn back into the advancing Egyptian army. And that, it seems to me, has a very real significance. For it tells us that the Israelites were not so much, in the eyes of God, in flight from Pharaoh, as on the initiative against Pharaoh. They were commanded to turn and face the enemy. And this turning and facing the enemy was part of the divine plan to destroy them. As I said, they turned back and encamped by the sea at Baal Zephon. And the way they were now positioned, they were in a cul-de-sac, and there was no way out for them. And humanly speaking, they were trapped. And Pharaoh and his armies saw this very clearly. And they immediately assumed that the Israelites were wandering about in a confused state, disorganized, and it would be an easy prey for the Egyptians. But you see, that is what the Lord wanted the Egyptians to think, because God was intent on having a confrontation with Israel. And that's why God commanded them to do this and led them into this apparent cul-de-sac. Now, there's a great deal of spiritual wisdom, of course, in all this, for the very good reason that God was intent upon dealing with his people as well as with Pharaoh. What, in effect, happened to the people of Israel was that they were shut up unto faith. The books about the historiography of the land tell us that on one side there were rocky crags. On the other side was the Red Sea. Behind them were the advancing armies. And on the fourth side, there was desert. They were trapped. There was nowhere to go. There was nothing for them to do. They could look in only one direction. And that direction was upwards. And that was the point of the exercise. They were shut up unto faith. True, they cried out in low-spiritedness, complaining to the Lord. And interestingly, this is some evidence of the murmuring spirit that so plagued and bedeviled the people of Israel in later times, that eventually God had to send them back into the wilderness and forbade them to enter into the promised land until that whole murmuring generation had died off in the wilderness. And here is an early evidence of that carping spirit. How was it they said, is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Just this whine that was in the heart of the people and which reached such momentous proportions in the later stages of their experience. But the fact of the matter is they were shut up unto faith. And Moses said to them, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. Now there's an important spiritual principle involved here, which has very wide application. God always shuts men up unto faith when he is dealings with them in grace. This is the pattern that the Holy Spirit follows in the conversion of a soul. A man is hedged in on all sides. Think of Saul of Tarsus. Slowly, steadily, inexorably, he was hedged in until all avenues of escape were closed to him, until on the Damascus Road he looked up and was saved. And that's how it is. God cuts away all our human props in order that we might at last trust in him alone and cast ourselves helplessly on him. That's what Moses was saying. Stand ye still and see the salvation of the Lord. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. I've told you before on one occasion how in the early days of the ministry here, I was preaching through Hebrews chapter 11 and had dealt with this exciting story. By faith, Moses, the Red Sea was open, and so on. And sometime later, we had an admission of communicants, and one of the communicants was being interviewed by me in the vestry, and I asked this young lass how it was she had become a Christian. Did she know any particular point in her experience when it clicked for her? And she said, oh yes. And she told me it was the Sunday morning that you preached on crossing the Red Sea. Oh, I said, that's very interesting. What was it particularly that struck you? It was when you said, on the left there was the sea, on the right there was the wilderness, on the other side was the rocky crags, and behind them were the Egyptians. And the only way left to look was to look up. And that's what they did. And she said, when you said that, I looked up and was converted. That's lovely. Wonderful. That's exactly how it is. And that was what God was intent upon teaching these people, to trust in his name utterly and completely. Now, Moses said, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. In verse 15, the Lord said, wherefore criest unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. Now, you might think there was a contradiction there. Stand still. Go forward. Moses was saying one thing. The Lord was saying another. But the contradiction, the paradox, is only apparent. It's not a real one, because they're referring to two different things. Moses was referring to the fact that they were in fact shut up unto faith. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. And that's always valid. But the Lord was speaking about something else. He wasn't criticizing Moses for saying stand still. He was on to the next bit. Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. It's not a contradiction any more than Paul contradicts himself, for example, in Galatians chapter 5. The first verse of that chapter says, stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free. And be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. A few verses farther on, Paul says, walk in the Spirit. Stand, walk. Now, there's no contradiction there in the spiritual sense. We stand as to our justification. We walk as to our sanctification. And in fact, going forward for the Israelites was the necessary expression of the standing still that they were doing as God was going to deliver them. That's the point. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. And having stood still, and having, and as one commentator puts it, what Moses was saying was, stop and think. And that's maybe not a bad interpretation or understanding of the words. Although I prefer what the authorized version says, stand still. But stop and think. He was inviting them to recognize that the God who had wrought so mightily in bringing them out of Egypt wasn't going to be hard pressed in dealing with their former captors. He had already set them free. Was it going to be impossible for God to do this other thing? and deal with them once and for all and forever? This is what Moses is pointing out. The Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. And if you wanted to make a spiritual application of that, then apply it to the glorious truth of justification by faith. Because when once we are justified by faith, we will see our enemies, the enemy of sin and guilt, no more again, forever. Our sin, not in part, but the whole, is nailed to the cross and remembered no more. That's how once for all it is. And that is what Moses is saying there. The Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. Now, the next thing I want to underline, and the time's going, is the function of the pillar of cloud and fire. Look at verse 20. Verse 19. The angel of God, who went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the angel was in the pillar. That's the point. And the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And then it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud and darkness to the Egyptians, but it gave light by night to the Israelites. And they were just as safe from the might of Egypt as if they'd been a million miles away, because the angel of the Lord in the pillar of cloud and fire was a wall of protection round about them. And what is more, look at verse 24. It came to pass that in the morning watch, the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off their chariot wheels. This is the hidden humor in Scripture. He troubled the host of the Egyptians, and their wheels fell off. Thus easily and thus effortlessly does the Lord of hosts deal with the enemies of his people. Aren't you glad that you've got a God like that? A God that can make chariot wheels fall off when they're intent upon pursuing us. Notice, three things are said about this pillar. The pillar of cloud and fire, it's called. And then, secondly, the angel of God, which is identified with it, verse 19. And in verse 24, it is the Lord himself in it. And all these things are true. This was not a natural phenomenon. It was a supernatural presence, the manifestation of a supernatural presence that accompanied Israel all through their journeys. And at every danger point, the pillar of cloud and fire surrounded them so that they were sacrosanct and their enemies couldn't get near them. He took off their chariot wheels that they drave them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them against the Egyptians. Isn't that a remarkable awareness that came to them? Their God, Jehovah, that they've been speaking about to us for so long in Egypt, he has proved himself to be real, and he's fighting against us. We haven't a chance. Let's get out of here. That was what they were saying. And at that critical point, the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, and upon their horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its strength when the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea, and the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. Moses had said, the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. Now, the actual miracle of the parting of the waters has been a subject of a great deal of comment and attempts at explanation. Some very well-meaning scholars have tried to rationalize this, not in the sense of explaining the miracle away, as to give some kind of natural explanation of it. Some have spoken about tides being strangely disordered at that particular moment in time. But it seems to me that the simple way of looking at this story is just to recognize that God did a wonderful and miraculous thing on this occasion. That's all there is to it. He miraculously parted the waters. Some of you may have seen a long time ago the film The Ten Commandments, in which there was the corniest kind of film effect, which just about looked as unpersuasive and unrealistic and stupid as anybody could have hoped to see, which tells us that you can't really illustrate the miraculous, because God's miracles are unique. And it all depends, you know, what concept we have of God. It's no problem to me to believe that God parted the waters of the Red Sea, if that was the way to get the children of Israel across on the road to Canaan, then so be it. That's how he did it. But the God who made the seas in the first instance has often shown himself very good at ordering them about and controlling them. When Jesus stood on the deck of the fishing boat in the Sea of Galilee, and in the midst of that raging storm that had so suddenly blown up, said, peace be still. And that was it. There was a great calm. And it doesn't help us at all to suggest in that story that all that happened was that Jesus spoke peace and calm into the hearts of the disciples. How silly can we be? It's much simpler and raises far less problem to just accept that the Lord of the seas, he who made the seas by the word of his power, stilled that particular storm on that particular day. Just like that. And it's the same here. It's exactly the same here. God parted the waters, just as later on in the story, he parted the waters of the River Jordan to let his people through. And surely the message is quite simple, and it's this. There is nothing that God will not do for those on whom he sets his love. And there is nothing too hard for the Lord to do. Nothing. And if it means opening the seas, then he'll open the seas. Now, this is one of the things that the Old Testament writers were aware of very well. You find often, for example, in the Psalms, descriptions of glorious theophanies. Psalm 18, for example. Look at Psalm 18. Just let's see what this marvelous psalm says. It begins, I will love thee, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength in whom I will trust. My buckler and the horn of my salvation and my high tower, I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from mine enemies. Then this, the sorrows of death compassed me and the floods of ungodly men made me afraid. The sorrows of hell compassed me about. The snares of death prevented me. In my distress I called upon the Lord and cried unto my God. He heard my voice out of his temple. And my cry came before him, even unto his ears. Then the earth shook and trembled. The foundations also of the hills moved and were shaken because he was wroth. There went up a smoke out of his nostrils, and fire out of his mouth devoured. Coals were kindled by it. He bowed the heavens also and came down, and darkness was under his feet. And he rode upon a cherub and did fly. Yea, he did fly upon the wings of the wind. He made darkness his secret place. His pavilion round about him were dark waters and thick clouds of the skies. At the brightness that was before him, his thick clouds passed, hailstones and coals of fire. The Lord also thundered in the heavens, and the highest gave his voice. Hailstones and coals of fire. Yea, he sent out his arrows and scattered them, and he shot out lightnings and discomfited them. Then the channels of waters were seen, and the foundation of the world were discovered at thy rebuke, O Lord, at the blast of the breath of thy nostrils. He sent from above, he took me, he drew me out of many waters. He delivered me from my strong enemy, and from them who hated me, for they were too strong for me. He brought me forth also into a large place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. Now what the psalmist is saying is this. We have a God who will move heaven and earth in the defense of his people. I don't know how you feel about that, but it thrills my soul and delights me that I have a God who is prepared to move the heavens and the earth to come to my aid. I, a worm of the earth. That's the kind of God we have. The psalmist recognized that. And indeed, the Egyptians recognized that when they saw that the Lord was fighting against them. And the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Stand still. Go forward. And it's perhaps not without significance that the chapter begins with an act of obedience by the children of Israel, even though they must have realized they were turning back into the path of the enemy. They trusted the Lord. And even when they were panicking by the Red Sea and moaning and whining as they did in verses 11 and 12, God was there. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. The Egyptians whom you have seen today, ye shall see them again no more, forever. What a story, and what a God. Blessed be his name. Now a prayer.